Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mishalo Chag B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, one who did not bring their Kurban Chagigah on the first day of Sukkot, Chogeget Kol HaRegel, he is allowed to bring the Kurban Chagigah on any of the days of Sukkot, B'yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, not only during the days of Sukkot, but even on Shmini Atzeret, one is allowed to bring the Chagigah that he should have brought on the first day of Sukkot. Avara Regel, if the holiday passed already, Velo Chag, and he did not bring his Kurban Chagigah, Enu Chayav Achriuto. He doesn't have any obligation to make it up. It is something now that is in the past, and he cannot rectify it anymore. Azen Ne'amar, on this we say the Pasuk that is found in Kohelet, Mi'uvat Lo Yuchol Litkon, something that is crooked that cannot be fixed, V'chesron, and a loss, Lo Yuchal Imanot, that cannot be enumerated. It is, in a sense, a permanent loss. It's something that you can no longer make up for. So during the regal itself, you have the ability to rectify missing any given day of bringing the chagiga. If you didn't bring it on the first day, then you can bring it on the second, so on and so forth. But once you've finished the regal and you didn't bring the korban chagiga, there's no longer any opportunity to rectify the situation. And again, that's like the pasuk in Kohelet, which describes something that is done permanently and cannot be rectified. Rabbi Shimon ben Asi omer, Ezehu me'uvat she'ena yachol lehitakein. What exactly is a mistake or something that is crooked that cannot be straightened out? Ze'a ba'al erva, this is someone who has an illicit relationship, beholid mimena mamzer, and then through that gives birth to a mamzer. As Rashi notes over here, because she'vi psulim b'Yisrael, he now has brought someone who is pasul into Klal Yisrael. Behei zichron. Oh, it's going to be a permanent reminder of his misdeed. Lefikach ein avonotav nimchakim b'tshuva. Even if he does tshuva, even if he mends his ways, the misdeed will always be spoken for by this mamzer that he has produced. So that is a problem, that is a mistake, that is an action that results in something that can never be rectified, reversed, or retracted, because he created something now that will never disappear. On the other hand, Tosafot explains a little differently in a nuanced manner, and he says, what is different about the Baal Erva? De tvei boshto nikar. His embarrassment or the publicity of what he has done is much more apparent. She'a mamzer nira le'olam. That mamzer is always there, and everybody sees the mamzer. But any other avira, like gneva, like Ritzicha, in Eidav Lefanav. The witnesses of his act, meaning the object of his act, is not always present, because either by Rotzeach, the person or the victim is dead, so he doesn't always face them or see them, as well as by Gneva, he can return the object, or the object's not always available or apparent to others, and therefore, in Eidav Lefanav. On the other hand, by the Mamzer, he's always looking at his mistake, he's always reminded of his mistake. Happens to be that it is an important factor in doing tshuva. We've spoken about this in the past, but it does have to do with, for instance, the Maaseh HaEgel. By the Maaseh HaEgel, when Bnei Yisrael worshipped the Egel, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and says to them, what did you do? How could you do this? And in the end, Bnei Yisrael let him crush up the Egel and destroy the Egel. But then Moshe Rabbeinu does not suffice with that. He forces them to drink the waters with the ashes of the Egel in it. And over there, Chazal tells us it's like the Mesota, that it was Bodek, those that worship the Egel. It's a nice explanation, but doesn't really explain the motivations behind Moshe forcing them to drink the Egel. So again, there's a lot to be said about this, but just in short, the idea that Moshe was trying to convey, or what Moshe was trying to accomplish by having them drink the water with the dust in or the ashes in it, was for them to internalize, to face their mistake, and not to say that it was something that was outside of them. They really didn't do it. It was the Egel that caused the problem. It wasn't them. Moshe forced them to face their sin and to face up to their responsibility by internalizing the sin that they did. So there is an importance when one wants to do tshuva, is not to separate between themselves and the sin, but to acknowledge and take responsibility for the sin. So that, in some senses, it's helpful to have the object be there as a reminder to the person that they've sinned. But once they've internalized it, once they've taken responsibility for it, then we don't want it to be there all the time, because then it never goes away. It's as if, even though you've taken the responsibility, it doesn't relinquish its hold on you. And so therefore, by the mamzer, it's much harder, because the misdeed is always sitting before you. You can take responsibility and then have it go away. On the other hand, with the other items, since they have disappeared in a sense, you can take responsibility. You can face up to the misdeed that you have done. Again, it's harder because there, the object's not in front of you. So a person would have to then actively take responsibility for it. And then, once they have taken responsibility for it, when it's not in front of them, then it's much easier to proceed along the path of tshuva. So that's what's being described here. Rabbi Shimon ben Asya says that the mamzer provides a difficulty for the one who is doing tshuva, either according to Rashi, because it's never erased, it's always in front of you. According to Tosafot, it's apparent, it's obvious to everyone else. Your embarrassment is much more public. And again, in the process of tshuva, even if one takes responsibility and does tshuva, the fact that the object of your chet is still being displayed makes it much more difficult for the individual. So Rabbi Shimon ben Asya continues and says, "Im tomar begonev vegozel," because if you explain the pasuk to be speaking about someone who stole or someone who was gozel, grabbed away, yachol hu lachziro v'itaken, he could just give it back and rectify the situation, which is not true by the mamzer. Shimba Yochai omer, "In korim uvat elamishaya matukan." You can only say someone is crooked or has gone off the path if they were once straight. Something that was straight can then be made crooked. Something that was once on a path can then veer from the path. So therefore, if "in korim uvat elamishaya matukan mitchila v'nita veit," and then went off, "Vezuzeh," who is this individual? "Tamid chacham aparesh min haTorah." So Talmud Chacham, who leaves the Torah, Talmud Chacham, who was engaged in Torah, and then leaves the Torah, or Talmud Chacham, who leaves the path of the Torah. So now the Gemara says, "Mena hanemile." How do we know that when it comes to Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret is considered one of the makeup days for the Chagigah? So Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, "Nemar Atzeret Bishvi'i Shel Pesach, V'nemar Atzeret Bishmini Shel Chag." The word or the term Atzeret is used to describe the seventh day of Pesach, and the word Atzeret is also used to describe the eighth day of Sukkot. Malahalan litashlumim. Just like by Pesach, nobody would think that the seventh day is not a makeup for the days or the first day of the Chag, because it's all Pesach. Afkan, so too by Shmini Atzeret litashlumim. It's also a makeup for the first day. When it says mufne, this word must be extraneous, available to create a gzeirah shavah. Dilav mufne, if it was not that way, ikon lemifrach, there is a logical unwinding of what you just proposed. Malashvi shel Pesach, shekein eino chaluk mishelefanav. The reason why it's so obvious that the seventh day of Pesach is included in terms of the makeup is because it's a part of Pesach. So since it's not independent of Pesach, that's why it makes up for the Chagigah that you didn't bring earlier. Tomar b'shmini shel Chag, when you're talking about Shmini Atzeret, shechaluk milefanav, which is a regel bifnei atzmo for pazer kashev, it has its own independent standing. It is not Sukkot, it is Shmini Atzeret. So therefore, how could you compare the two? So if you just simply say that there's a parallel between Atzeret and Atzeret, I can undermine that logic. But the Gemara says, if it's Mufne, if the word is extraneous, then I make a Gzeirah Shavah that is not bound by logic. So if you're simply making a Limud to Atzeret, Atzeret, and comparing two items, then you are bound by logic, and the logic can be undermined. On the other hand, if you have mufneh, if the word is extraneous, then the gzeirah shavah is more powerful than logic, and it overrides logic. And that's what the Gemara says here. You must have it be mufneh. The Gemara in other places discusses mufneh mitzad echad, mufneh mishnei tzadim, whether the word has to be only extraneous on one side of the gzeirah shavah in order for it to be a gzeirah shavah that overrides logic, or does it have to be mufneh mishnei tzadim? Does it have to be extraneous on both sides of the gzeirah shavah to override? Some chloket, other places in Shas, here the Gemara does not address it at all, but just simply says it has to be mufneh. It has to be a case where the gzeirah shavah is overriding logic because there's an extraneous word over here. And the Gemara says, "Lei, be'emet, truthfully, you're right. Afnuye mufneh, the word is extraneous. Michdi, let us see, my atzeret. What is the meaning of the word atzeret in the context of deep sukim? Atzur basiat malacha, means to desist from doing work. So Haktiv, in Parshat Re'eh, by the Chag HaMatzot, by Chag HaPesach, it says, Sheshet Yamim Tocham Matzot, Uv'yom HaShvi'i Atzeret L'Hashem Elokecha, 6 days you eat Matzot, on the 7th day it will be an Atzeret L'Hashem Elokecha. And remember, we just translated the word Atzeret to mean, Latzor, to stop, to desist from doing work. Lo Taseh Melacha. And it says, don't do work. So it seems to be that the Pasuk is repeating itself. It's saying Atzeret on the 7th day, and it's also saying Lo Taseh Melacha. So it is repeating itself in the fact that you must desist from doing work. And that's why the Gemara says here, the word Atzeret is extraneous. Atzeret Tichtiv Rechman Olamali. So why did the Torah write the word Atzeret if already is going to say Lo Taseh Melacha? Elishma Mina. From this you must conclude, Lafnuye, it is extraneous, the word. That extraneous word now allows us to make the Gzeir Shova between Pesach and Shemini Atzeret, and to teach us that Shemini Atzeret is able to override any logical undermining of that comparison, and to tell us, just like by Pesach, the 7th day can make up for the prior days in terms of the Chagigah, so too on Sukkot, the 8th day, Shemini Atzeret can make up for those prior days if you did not bring the Chagigah. So that's the limud of Rabbi Yochanan. Betana, mighty law mehocha. Betana brings it from here. The reason the Gemara uses this lashon is because the previous limud was proposed by Rabbi Yochanan, who's an Amora. So now they say, well, we have a Tana who brings it from here, the Tanya. V'chagotem oto chag l'Hashem shivat yamim bashana. You will celebrate Sukkot for 7 days during the year. Chukat olam l'dor techem b'chodesh hashvi'i tachogoto. You will have this as a law forever for all your generations, that in the 7th month, you will celebrate it. So now the Gemara says, based on this, that Tano suggests, what does it mean? Chagutem oto chag l'Hashem shivat yamim. Yachol yehei chogeg v'olech kol shiva'ah. You would think you would have to bring the chagigah every day, because it says, v'chagutem oto chag l'Hashem, which is one of the sources, when we mentioned the introduction of the Masechta, possibly for the bringing of the Qurban chagigah. It says you must be chogeg, you must celebrate. How do you celebrate? So again, the way that Torah Shebaal Peh explains this to us is that you bring a Qurban Chagigah. So then the Gemara says, Oto. It says in the Pasuk, V'chagotem, Oto. Oto seems to specify a specific or particular day. So therefore we have a miut. Oto malomar Oto. Oto atachogeg. V'atachogeg kol shiva. On that day you bring it, not all 7 days. So imkein lamane amar shiva. Why does it mention 7 days if there's a particular day which you are obligated to bring the Chagigah on? It says, litashlumim, for makeup. So basically, what he learns from this is, v'chagotem oto means, bring your Chagigah on the 1st day. Chag l'Hashem shivat yamim. If you haven't done it, that's the primary day, that's the primary obligation. If you didn't do it in that primary obligation, then it's a chag l'Hashem shivat yamim. You have the additional days to make it up. The entirety of the 7 days, you can bring the Chagigah on any of those 7 days. So the 6 subsequent days will be tashlumim to the 1st, or will allow you to make up what you didn't do on the 1st. We'll see exactly what the proper formulation is in a couple of minutes. Then he continues, minayin shimlo chag yom tov rishon shechag shechogeg v'lechet kol haregel v'yom tov acharon. So that only tells us about the 7 days of Sukkot. What about the 8th day? What about Shemini Atzeret? So how do I know that if he didn't bring his Chagigah on the 1st day, and he didn't bring it on the entirety of the 7 days of Sukkot, how do I know that he can bring it on Shemini Atzeret on Yom Tov Acharon? Tamad Omar, b'chodesh hashvi'i tochogu oto. In the 7th month, you will celebrate it. I b'chodesh hashvi'i. In the 7th month, yoko yehei chogeg v'alech ha-chodesh kulo. You think you can bring in a Chagigah any time during the 7th month? Tamad Omar oto. Again, there's another word oto, which is a mute. Oto atachogeg v'yatachogeg chutzalo. You can only be chogeg on the holiday itself, but not outside of it. It's limited to the holiday itself. But we see from the 2nd tachogu in the pasuk that there's an additional day of chagigah that is permitted. And that additional day of chagigah is the 8th day. So the Tana brings it from this pasuk, the fact that the pasuk says, v'chogotem oto, and then again later in the pasuk says, tachogu oto. So it tells you that there are 2 days on which you can do the chagigah. One is the 1st day, that's the oto in the first part of the pasuk, and the oto in the latter half of the pasuk is the 8th day. And then v'shivat yamim tells you that you can make it up in any of those other days, and that's the same by the words v'chodesh hashvi'i. Tosafot brings from the Yushalmi that there are other limudim, including Gzeir Shava that we know from other places, which is Tedvav, the 15th, which is that Sukkot is on the 15th, Pesach is on the 15th, and we have Gzeir Shava that brings over dinim from one to the other. And so to over here, just like Pesach has tashlumim for all the days of the Chag, so too, by Sukkot, they have tashlumim for all the days of the holiday, including the eighth day, and so on and so forth. The Yerushalmi brings other sukkim and other limudim to show that the eighth day is also part of the tashlumim for Sukkot. Well, my tashlumim, the Gemara here wants to understand, when you're making up the chagigah that you did not bring on the first day, how do we view your ability to bring it on the subsequent days? Do we view it as a makeup? The primary day is the first day, and anything else is just a tashlumim to make up for what you should have done or what you didn't do on the first day? Or do we say that all the days have an equal obligation in bringing a korban chagigah? You should bring it on the first day, because that's the first time you bump into the mitzvah. But you didn't bring it on the first day, the obligation still exists on the second day, meaning that the obligation only terminates once you brought the chagigah. But until you bring the chagigah, the entire holiday is equal opportunity for you to bring the chagigah. And that's the machloket we're going to see now, which is my tashlumim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar tashlumim derishon, that the tashlumim means that the primary day, the ikar chiyuv, is on the first day. Everything else is a makeup for the first day. So the obligation only exists on the first day. If you didn't do it on the first day, then you have opportunity to make it up after that. Rabbi Shai Amar tashlumim zelazeh. Again, it's not exactly as you would translate it. It's not that one is tashlumim to the other, but rather the obligation devolves upon the holiday as a whole, and you can discharge it on any of the days of the holiday. No day is a makeup for the first day. Every day is its own obligation, but once you've done it, then it eliminates the obligation and removes the remaining days from the obligation. So, my benayu, what's the nafkamina between these two reasons? Someone who was lame on the first day, and then became healthy or was able to walk on the second day. Remember earlier in the Masechta that we said that someone who is chiger b'yom rishon is patur min ha-regel, aliyah the regel, patur min ha-chagigah, patur min ha-ri'iyah, because he cannot walk up to the har habayit. So on the first day he was patur. Then on the second day he becomes healthy, whatever was wrong was now rectified, and now he can walk up. Can he bring his chagigah? Well, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Tashlumin Rishon, Rabbi Yochanan says that it's a makeup for the first day, Kevin de Lochazi Berishon, Lochazi Besheni. Since he was not chayav, he was not obligated on the first day to come and do it on the second day, is meaningless, because why do you have to make up for something that you were not obligated in? If you're obligated in it, then you have to make up for it because you missed it. But over here, where you were patur, you were exempted on the first day, there's no reason to make it up on the second day. The second day is an independent day that has nothing to do with the first day in terms of its equal obligation. It's simply a makeup for the first day. But if you were patur on the first day, exempt on the first day, then you don't have to do anything on the second day. Whereas, according to Rabbi Shaya, Amar Tashlumin Zelazeh, Afagadolo Chazi Berishon, Chazi Besheini, since each day has its own independent obligation that can be discharged if you did it on the previous day, but otherwise it has an obligation to bring a chagigah, then on the second day when he's healthy, it's an obligation to bring the chagigah on the second day, because he didn't already discharge that on the first day. Just because he couldn't do it on the first day or was exempted on the first day doesn't change anything about the situation that he's chayav to bring a chagigah on the days of the chag. Again, we spoke about this earlier in the Masechta. This is a basic chakira. Whenever you talk about makeup or tashlumim, do you view the tashlumim as being an ability to rectify something you missed in the core or the essential mitzvah? Or do you view tashlumim as simply a larger span of time over which you can accomplish the mitzvah? And therefore, the nafkamina will always be if you are patur during the ikar zman of the mitzvah. Do you have the ability to make it up? If it's simply a makeup for the ikar zman, then the answer will be no. On the other hand, if it just means that you've expanded the span of time in which you can accomplish the obligation, then even if you were patur during the quote-unquote ikar zman, you could still make it up or still do it in the residual or extra time that you're granted in order to do it. And that here is argued between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shaya. Early in the Masechta, we mentioned this with regards to Havdalah, machlok between the Rosh and his Rebbe, the Maharam Rutenberg, about what's the nature of Havdalah. The fact that you're allowed to make Havdalah until Tuesday, is that simply because the Zman of Havdalah exists from Motzei Shabbat until Tuesday? Or is the Iker Zman of Havdalah Motzei Shabbat, or maybe even Yom Rishon, all of Sunday? But if you didn't do it then, you're allowed to be Mashlim, you're allowed to make it up on the subsequent days, and the nafkamina would be for someone who is an onain, someone who would be patur from Havdalah and Motzei Shabbat, And then, after the mate is buried, becomes chayav in mitzvot, would they have to make Havdalah at that point in time, since they were patur during the Iker Zman of Havdalah, if you believe there's an Iker Zman? But if you may think that Havdalah, just you have the ability to make it over that entire period, then once the person becomes chayav in mitzvot, he makes the Havdalah. According to the one who says that Havdalah is just in the Iker Zman, everything else is tashlumim, there's no reason to make up the Havdalah afterwards, because you weren't chayav during the Iker Zman. The other thing that's clear from this Gemara is that the Gemara only talks about Tashlumim Dirishon versus Tashlumim Zelezeh with regards to Pesach and Sukkot. These are holidays that have multiple days associated with them, where you could suggest that it's not just a makeup for the first day, but each day could be an obligation by itself in terms of Chagigah. But with regards to Shavuot, it's clear that it's Tashlumim Dirishon, because by Shavuot, the first day is Yom Tov, after that they are Yemei Chol. Nobody's going to suggest that the Yemei Chol are the Iker days of Chagigah. And therefore, it seems that everybody would agree by Shavuot that it's Tashlumim de Rishon, because there really is only one day of a Chag. And therefore, the only way you could describe it is as a makeup for the Iker day or the first day of Shavuot. Now, the Gemara challenges this understanding and says, Mi'amar Rabbi Yochanan Hochi. Can Rabbi Yochanan really subscribe to this position? Does he really believe that it is a Tashlumim de Rishon? V'ha'amar Chizkiyah. Chizkiya has a position. Nitma bayom, mevi. If he became tamei during the day, he brings it. Balaila, if he became tamei at night, einu mevi, he does not bring it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, af balaila nami mevi. Even if he became tamei at night, he also brings it. It's unclear here what the Gemara is speaking about. Rashi, Tosafot, or Reino Chananel, most of the Rishonim read this as referencing to a Nazir. A Nazir who became tamei during his Nizirot. So the Torah tells us that a Nazir that becomes Tamei during his Nizirut has to then become Tahor. He has to count the 7 days of Tara from the Tarat Amate. And then the 8th day he brings Korbanot that restart his counting of the Nizirut. Then he will go back to counting Nizirut b'Tara on the 8th day. So what we're describing here is an individual who went through the 7 days of Tara and now completed those 7 days and did not become Tamei. Then on the 8th day, question of when on the 8th day, but on the 8th day he becomes Tamei Mate again. So the question is, when did he become Tamei? If he became Tamei on the day of the 8th day, everybody agrees. That's both Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan agree. If he became Tamei on the 8th day, that's what we call a new incident. It's a new incident, and he'll have to bring a seppin korban for each of the incidents once he becomes Tahor. Meaning that he was Tamei Mate, and that ruined his Nizirut. Now he has to go ahead, wait the 7 days to become Tahor, and bring the korbanot for a Nazir Tamei. Now, on the 8th day, once he reached the 8th day, he was ra'ui. He was able to bring his korbanot on that day. And not only that, he's actually obligated to bring it on the 8th day, because in the Torah demands that it be done on the 8th day. If you don't do it on the 8th day, then it b'ki teshlumim, then it can be made up afterwards. And that's why this is parallel to our case. It doesn't seem, on face value, it doesn't seem parallel, but because of the demand of the Torah that he bring it on the 8th day, and it seems from the Torah Shebaal Peh that there's an obligation on the 8th day. It doesn't mean from the 8th day and onward, but it means literally on the 8th day he's supposed to bring his korban. So once he reaches the 8th day and he could have brought his korbanot, we assume that the first tumah was terminated. And then if he becomes tamei again, it becomes a separate and discrete event, and he'll have to bring korbanot for becoming tamei again. So that's according to everyone. The question becomes of the night before, the night of the 8th, going into the day of the 8th. One may not bring korbanot at night. Night is not a time for korbanot. So he completed the 7 days of Tara, and now he's after that 7th day of Tara, that night, leading into the 8th day, then he becomes tamei at that night. What is his din? This is what Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiya argue about. When he becomes tamei at night, does that continue the previous tumah that he had? Meaning that this is not a discrete event. It's as if he never became tahor, and it's as if he has one, call it long tumah, and therefore he doesn't have to bring a separate korban for this second event of tumah. Or do we say, since he completed his tara process, on the night, if he becomes tamei, even though he couldn't bring his korbanot, he's already into the 8th day, since he's into the 8th day, he now has to consider this tumah a separate or discrete event, and he'll have to bring separate korbanot for that event. There's a similar machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to a woman who gives birth, and then the Yemei Tara and the Yemei Tuma that she has afterwards, when she reaches that final day of her Yemei Tara, where she has to bring the korbanot on the 41st or the 81st day, what happens if she becomes Tmeya, or something happens on the night before that she miscarries, Is that considered to be a separate or discrete leida? Or is that considered to be one leida, the continuation of the first leida, and she only has to bring one korban or two korbanot? Machloket beit Hillel, beit Shammai there. This is a very similar type of machloket here. What is the din of the night before? So Rabbi Yochanan over here suggests that even if it happened at night, it's two discrete events, and it's to bring separate korbanot. Whereas Chizkiyah believes that only if it happens during the day, not at night. So over here, you have a case where you're supposed to bring it on the eighth day, and you didn't bring the korbanot yet, and you became tamei. So you are on the eighth day if it happens. Everybody agrees that you should have brought the korbanot. You could have brought the korbanot, so the new tumah makes it into a new discrete event. The night before, where you couldn't have brought the korbanot, what is the status of that time period? Well, according to Chizkiyah, he says, since you can't bring the korbanot, you're still within the world of the first tumah. And if you come to Tamei then, it just becomes a continuation of the first tumah. It's not a separate and discrete event. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that even though on the night you cannot bring korbanot, nevertheless, if you become Tamei that night, that's a separate and discrete event. And so what the Gemara is assuming here is that since at nighttime you became Tamei, a time that it's not ra'ui to bring korbanot, so that's the equivalent of the first day where you couldn't bring a korban, and despite that fact, he's saying that you have to make it up. You have tashlumim, meaning that since you couldn't bring it on that night, because korbanot cannot be brought on that night, and you then bring it on the eighth day itself, Rabbi Yochanan sees that time period as being tashlumim, or the ability to bring the korban afterwards, as enough of a reason to say that this is a separate or discrete event. So even though this is not a time period that is ra'i for korbanot, nevertheless, the next morning you can make up the korban, because this must have been a time that is already considered part of the day of the eighth, even though you can't bring the korbanot. So despite the fact that it's not a time that you could bring a korban, nevertheless, the next day when you bring the korban, that's making up for what you couldn't do at night. And therefore the Gemara sees this as a question, Rabbi Yochanan's position, who says by the korban chagigah, if you missed the first day or you were not chayav on the first day, you can't make it up. Whereas by Nazir here at nighttime where you couldn't bring the korban, nevertheless, when you get to the eighth day and you could have made up the korban, that makes that night as if you were quote unquote obligated. And it doesn't matter the fact that you couldn't bring the korban at night. So now the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Shani Tumah, Deish La Tashlumim Pesach Sheni. Shani Tumah. Tumah is different. It's a world that is different. We have other examples where Tumah can be made up for someone who was exempt at the core Chiyuv. For instance, Pesach Sheni. By Pesach Rishon, if someone was Tamei and they missed or they were exempted from the core mitzvah, which is on Pesach Rishon, nevertheless, they get to make it up on Pesach Sheni. So we have a paradigm within the world of Tumah of making up for something when you were not chayav in the ikar moment. So tumah is different than other obligations. Other obligations, if you're exempt at the core, then you can't make it up. Whereas by tumah, even if you're exempt at the time that it was the ikar obligation, nevertheless, you have a chance to make it up. And therefore, this cannot be compared. The two cases can't be compared because tumah is a different world or a world unto its own. That is the way that it's described by most Rishonim. On the other hand, the Me'iri says over here that the Gemara is not describing a Nazir, but rather describe me a case of the first day of Yom Tov. And the question here of the machlok between Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan is, when did the person become Tamei? Chizkiyah says, if the person became Tamei during the daytime, then Mevi. Balaylo, Einu Mevi. On nighttime, then he cannot bring it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, Af Balaylo Nami Mevi. Even if he became Tamei at night, he still brings the Korban. Which means that Chizkiyah believes that until you've experienced a part of the first day of Yom Tov without Tumah, where you could have brought a Korban Chagigah, I mean you were obligated or there was a point in time during that day you were obligated, then you can make it up, then you can bring the Korban Chagigah for the subsequent days as Tashlumim the Rishon. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, even at night, if the person became Tamei, and that exempted him from his obligation to bring the Korban Chagigah, he still nevertheless can make it up on the subsequent days. So here you have a case of Rabbi Yochanan where the person's Tamei, they couldn't bring it on the first day, and yet they're able to make it up afterwards. So that's the question of Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara's answer is, Am Rabbi Yirmiyah Shani Tumah. Tumah is different because Tumah is unlike other exemptions, as Tosafot described earlier in the Masechta, there's a difference between something that is posel and adam, which is internal to them, that exempts them from the Korban, versus exogenous variable like Tumah, which exempts them because of the Tumah, but technically they could bring the Chagigah or they could send the Chagigah with someone else. We're not allowed to do that. They need to bring the Chagigah themselves. But since it's not they themselves that exempt, but rather Tumah that exempts them, we said that they are obligated, and the example they bring is Pesach Sheni. By Pesach Rishon, even though the person couldn't bring the Korban because he was Tameh, he's allowed to make it up in Pesach Sheni. So you see that Tuma is not a psul that takes the person and makes him exempt completely. It's just a deferral of the obligation. And so too over here, what we're saying about Rabbi Yochanan is that if the person became Tameh at night, even though the person never had the ability to bring the Korban because he became Tameh on the night of the first day, nevertheless, that's not a complete exemption. The person is really obligated. It's just the Tumah is preventing him from completing the obligation, and therefore he can make it up in the subsequent days. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan before was speaking about an exemption where the person was a Chiger, where the person inherently was exempt from the Korban, and therefore he can't make it up later because the Ptur was a complete exemption. So that's the way that the Meiri reads the Gemara versus the way that Rashi, Tosafot, and other Rishonim read the Gemara. Then the Gemara asks, Matifla Rapapa, Hanichon the Mandamar, that works well according to one who says, Pesach Sheni, when it comes to Pesach Sheni, that it's Tamshlumim the Rishonho, that it's a makeup for the first one. Meaning that if you didn't do the Korban Pesach on the first Pesach, then you can make it up on the Pesach Sheni. Elo Mandamar, Sheni Regal Bifneatz Mohu, but if you according to one who says that Pesach Sheni basically is an independent holiday, you're right, that if you brought your Korban Pesach on the first, you don't bring it on the second because you've already brought a Korban Pesach. But nevertheless, Pesach Sheni is not a makeup for the first, but its own holiday. It's a regel bifnei atzmo that you have to bring a Korban Pesach if you have yet to bring a Korban Pesach in that year. If that's the case, then you don't have any proof that Tuma is different than other types of psulim. So Mayikul Meimar, what are you going to say there? El Amra Papa, Kasavar Rabbi Yochanan, Laila Einem Mechusar Zman. We're going to change the view of Rabbi Yochanan here. Rabbi Yochanan is basically saying that nighttime is not considered to be a lack of ability to bring a Korban. Now, Rabbi Yochanan agrees you can't bring Korbanot at night. That is a given halacha, because you're only allowed to, b'yom Sabbato, you're only allowed to bring Korbanot during the day. But what Rabbi Yochanan is going to tell you is that at nighttime, technically, it is a zman for Korbanot. Again, there's an exogenous variable called night that is blocking you from bringing the Korban, but it is considered to be a time of Korban. Now, once you've done that, that changes the dynamic that when Rabbi Yochanan says you become Tameh at night, he believes you're already chayav in the Korban already. Why can't you bring it? Because it's nighttime. The other way, the way Chizkiyah views nighttime is, nighttime doesn't even entertain the possibility of Korbanot. Korbanot don't start. The obligation of Korbanot doesn't start till the daytime. And therefore, if anything happens at night, it's still part of the old Tumah. It's still part of anything that was beforehand until you reach the daytime where you actually can bring the Korban. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan views nighttime as the start of the obligation of the Korban. It's just there's a technicality that blocks you from bringing the Korban called nighttime. So by doing that, now Rabbi Yochanan is not inconsistent, because Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that if you are patur when you have the core obligation, then you can't make it up later on. Over here, at nighttime, whether you think it's speaking about Nazir or whether you think it's talking about Chagigah, since you already entered into the night, and before you became Tameh, you had an obligation to bring the Korban, you're now considered to be obligated. Oh, you can't bring Korbanot at night? That's a technical problem. But you were obligated in the Korban. And then when you became Tameh, it changed that. But you were at some point obligated in the Korban. Because of that, everything else becomes Tashlumim Dirishon. And since you were Chayav at some point at nighttime, you can make it up in the subsequent days if you're talking about a Chagigah for the Meiri. Or for the case of the Nazir, it would mean that you've now started a new count. And therefore, if you became Tameh again, it's a discrete event, then you'd have to bring a separate Korbanot Tumah for becoming Tameh in this instance. The Gemara says, Umiyama Rabbi Yochanan Hochi, does Rabbi Yochanan really believe that nighttime is a Zman Korbanot? Vama Rabbi Yochanan, Rachat Balailo, he has one sighting, a mission at night, Ushtaim Bayom, and then two during the day, Mevi. Shtaim Balailo, but if he has two at night, Vachat Bayom, Eino Mevi, and one during the day, he does not bring it. Here we're talking about the emissions of a Zav. When it comes to the emissions of a Zav, if he sees one time, then he is considered like a Balkeri and he's Tameh Tumat Yom. He goes to the mikveh and the sun sets and he is Tahor. If he sees a second emission, then he's Tameh for 7 days and he has to wait to keep 7 days of Tahara and then he is Tahor. If he has three sightings, then only does he have to wait the 7 days of Tahara, he also has to bring Korbanot on the 8th day. So this is an instance where someone already had three sightings and he had the 7 days of Tahara. He's completed his 7 days of Tahara and now he's into the 8th day. And he is now ready to bring his Korbanot on the 8th day. So when did he have the sightings? In this case, Rabbi Yochanan says, if he had one sighting on the night, after the 7th day, on the beginning of the 8th day, he has one sighting at night, and two during the day, mevi. Then he has to bring a separate Korban for this Tumah, because the first Tumah Ziva ended, and the new one began, because he completed the first one, he reached the eighth day without being a Zav, because the first sighting only made him to a Baal Keri, and then when he reaches the morning of the eighth day, he already chayev in his korbanot, and if he has a new sighting that makes him to a Zav, it's a new event of Ziva, and he'll have to bring separate korbanot. On the other hand, shtayim balayla v'achad bayom, if he has two sightings at night, and one during the day, then his Zav or Ziva took place at night, before he ever became chayev in korbanot on the day of the eighth, and therefore inu mevi, he doesn't bring a separate korban for this Ziva incident, because it was a continuation of the first Ziva incident. If Rabbi Yochanan really believes that Laila is a time for korbanot, if he has two sightings at night, and one during the day, maybe he should have to be, or the same would be true, if he had all three sightings at night, he should be forced to bring a separate korban for this discrete event of Ziva, because as soon as you enter into the nighttime, you were chayav in korbanot, that completed the first Ziva, and now you're really starting a new event, and you'll have to bring separate korbanot. Where it says, no, in that incident, Kiyama Rabbi Yochanan, Divrei Omer, Laila Mechusar Zman. Rabbi Yochanan is not talking his own position there. He's explaining, according to the one who says that nighttime is not considered to be a time for Korbanot, meaning that it's considered to be Mechusar Zman, and that does not end the event of the first Ziva until you reach the day of the eighth, then the din is, if he has two sightings at night, one during the day, he is not in a discrete event, it's a continuation of the first Ziva, and he has to bring one Korban. If he has one sighting at night and two during the day, then it's considered to be a discrete event, and he'll have to bring two separate korbanot for his two different incidents of Ziva. Right, says the Divrei Omer Pshita. Of course, why would there be any question? What Rabbi Yochanan described is obvious, that according to the one who says nighttime is not the Zman of korbanot, you have to wait until the eighth day before you become chayav in a separate incident of Ziva. And that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan describes. Right, says, no, shtayim bayom v'cha b'layla itztrichalei. The incident where he had one sighting at night and two during the day, he had to describe that. Like the question of Rav Sheshe Barav Deidi, who suggests that since you had one of the sightings not at a time of chiyuv, meaning that the one sighting at night, which collectively with the three makes him into a zav, happened at nighttime before he became chayav in his korbanot, therefore he should not be considered a separate incident of zav. Kamash Malan ki Rav Yosef. We pass them like Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef explains over there what's the difference, or why is one sighting at night okay, and it doesn't undermine the fact that this is a separate Ziv or Zav incident, because the first sighting for a Zav is like a Baal Keri. So since the first sighting is a din like a Baal Keri, it's not really a part of the complex of a Zav, and it's only when you have the subsequent sightings is it mitztaref. It joins with the subsequent sightings to make him into a Zav. And therefore, in this case, where he has the two sightings during the day, it pulls the third sighting with it to make him into a full-fledged three-sighting Zav, but the first sighting itself is not part of the complex of Zav. So therefore, he can see it at night, and it won't be considered a continuation of the previous incident of Zav, because the other two that he saw, the sightings of Zav, which are the second and third, were seen during the day. But if he has two at night, where the first one you could classify as Valkyrie, but the second one already is a sighting of Zav, since he never got to the point where he could bring his korbanot, according to the one who says Laila is mechusar zman, Laila is not the time to bring korbanot, and therefore only once you reach the daytime of the 8th is it considered to be, you finished the first incident, and now you're moving into the second incident. In that case, over here, since you had the two sightings at night, it's a continuation, it's an extension of the original sighting or the original incident of Zav, and you'll only bring one korban for both incidents. Now, over here, Rashi describes this as being a continuation, as I've been describing here, that the event is a continuous event. It's as if you're still continuing the first event, Ziva. Whereas by Nazir, Rashi described the continuation or having the sighting of Tumah as being Tashlumim. And the reason might be is because there's a difference in the obligation of a Nazir to a Zav. By Nazir, there's an obligation to bring his korbanot on the eighth day. And if he doesn't bring it on the eighth day, then the Torah allows you to bring it thereafter. Anytime after that eighth day is Tashlumim of the eighth day. And that's why the 8th day is so essential, and that's why Rashi terms it as being Tashlumim. Whereas over here by Zav, Rashi doesn't call it Tashlumim because one is permitted to bring their korbanot on the 8th day, but not obligated to bring their korbanot on the 8th day. It's from the 8th day and on, one can bring their korban whenever they so choose, but there's no obligation to bring on the 8th day. And that's why Rashi might describe the two events differently, which is that by the case of Nazir, he describes the obligation on the 8th day and anything subsequent to that to be Tashlumim to the 8th day. Whereas by Zav, he says that anything that comes after the seventh day is now either a new incident of Zav or continuation of the first incident of Zav. By Tumah, you can't say that. By definition, coming to contact with a mate and then coming into contact with another mate are two discrete events, two discrete mateim, two different events of Tumah, and therefore you can't talk about it as being a Tumah Arichta, one long Tumah. Over here, you can talk about it being a Ziva Arichta, that's a continuation of the first emissions, because you basically never became Tahor, and you're just continuing in that path of Tumah. So if you note, the Lashon and Rashi is slightly different here by the incident of Zav than it is by the incident of Nazir. Now the Gemara says, Avar Regel v'lo Chag, enu chaya b'achriyoto. If the holiday passes and he didn't bring his chagiga, he's not responsible to bring it. Barhehe says to Hillel, "Haili imanot is the wrong word to use here. It should be lehi malot. When you talk about a loss, it's a loss that cannot be filled, or it's a void that cannot be filled. It's not a chesaron that you cannot count. You can't enumerate the loss. Enumeration is the wrong word to use here as the loss or description of the loss for something that you cannot make up. It should be lo himalot, would have been the opposite of chisaron. So that's why he says the word should have been hilamot mibayle. As far as Barhehe is concerned, Tosafot over here says that Barhehe was likely a ger, and they called him Barhehe because he's the son of Avraham and Sarah. Beautiful idea that all gerim are considered to be the children of Avraham and Sarah, because they are the original gerim. And Hashem added on to their names, both Avram and Sarah added on a hey to their name. So Barhehe or Benhehe is the son of Avram and Sarah who had hey added to their name. In addition to that, Tosafot mentions that he thinks that this Benhehe or Barhehe is the same as Ben Bagbag. And they call him Ben Bagbag because Bet and Gimel and Gematria adds up to 5. So it's the equivalent of Barhehe or Benhehe. So now he questions Hillel and says that the word that is used in the pasuk seems to be the wrong word. So he says, "Elazet shiminu chaverav the dvar mitzvah v'lohu lo nimne imahem." It comes to teach you some other lesson, a lesson that's found in a brayta in the beginning of Tefillat HaShachar in the Gemara Brachot, which says, "Tanya nami ochi." We have a brayta in the Gemara Brachot that says, "Miuvat lo yochol litkon," something that is crooked or a mistake that cannot be rectified. That's someone who missed Kriyat Shema in the morning or at night, which there is no makeup for. Since there's no makeup, if you missed it, it's a mistake that cannot be rectified. Or he did not daven Shmonesre, didn't daven Shacharit, or he didn't daven Shmonesre in Arvit, he cannot make it up. Now here the Gemara in Tefillat HaShachar says that that's not the case. We know that you're allowed to make up when you forget to daven Shacharit, you can daven Mincha twice. Forgot to daven Ma'ariv, you can daven Shacharit twice. So what does this brayta mean? There the Gemara distinguishes between someone who misses B'mezid, intentionally misses the tefillah and says, you know what, I'll make it up in the next one. I won't daven Shacharit, I'll just daven Mincha twice. That type of intentional deferment of the tefillah is not allowed, and then you can't make it up. That's a muvat, lo yechol litkon. If it's b'shogeg, or it's b'ones, if it was accidental, or it was a mistake, maybe could have been prevented, but it wasn't done intentionally, it was unintentional, then he can make it up. But our Bright is talking about a case where he intentionally left it over to try to daven twice in the next tefillah. There he can't make it up. So if you miss Kriyat Shema, you miss Shmon Esrei, you can't make it up, and it is a mistake that cannot be rectified. Over here, Tosafot points out that this is not only according to one who says that tefillat arvit is chovah, that tefillat arvit is an obligation, but it might be even according to one who says tefillat arvit is a reshut, is optional. This is Tosafot the Shitoto in the Gemara and Brachot and in other places, that when you say the word reshut, reshut doesn't mean optional. Reshut means if there's no other mitigating factor, then you do it. So that means that if you have a chance to do Ma'ariv, you have to do it. But if you have a mitigating factor, then you're allowed to consider that mitigating factor and override Ma'ariv. If you're involved in another mitzvah, or according to the Yerushalmi, if you already got into bed and it would be too much trouble to get back out again, then that's a mitigating factor that would say you don't have to daven Ma'ariv, according to the one who says tefillat arvit reshut. This is Tosafot Shitato, which means reshut doesn't mean completely optional, just means reshut relative to chovah. Obligatory means you have to do it no matter what. Reshut means you do it unless there's a mitigating factor. Today, again, it doesn't matter, as the Bahag says, that since we were mekabli alei chovah, even though arvit is reshut, we accept it as a chovah, now it always has the same din as a chovah because of that acceptance, but there are certain dinim that are applicable to Ma'ariv that are because it was once a reshut, including the issue of smichut geula letfila, which is absolutely necessary by shacharit, can be overridden by mariv. So for instance, if someone came late to a minyan in shacharit, if you came late, you would have to start before Kriyat Shema and say Kriyat Shema and the Baruch of Gal Yisrael and then continue into Shmona Esrei because of the necessity of smicha geula letfila. Whereas at night, where tefillat arvit is a reshut, there we say that smicha geula letfila is not as important. And therefore, if one came in late to Mariv and they were about to daven Shmona Esrei, he should daven Shmona Esrei with the minyan and then go back afterwards and say Kriyat Shema to make it up. So there are little differences that are residual, the fact that Mariv is reshut. Also, according to the Rambam, that's why there's no Chazarat HaShatz during Mariv. But technically, Mariv has the same din as all other tefillot for us now, which is that it's a chovah, it's an obligatory tefillah like Shacharit and Mincha. So that's the description of the first half of the Pasuk. What about the second half of the Pasuk? V'chesron lo yuchal limanot, zeshin niu chavirav l'dvar mitzvah. His friends got together to perform a mitzvah, v'lo nimne imahem, and he didn't join them. So they got together to do this mitzvah, and he didn't join them. Since he didn't join them, he lost. He's lost it forever because they went and did the mitzvah. They're not going to do it again. He missed out by not joining them. The Marsha describes over here that it's talking about a minyan. That he went to make a minyan together and he didn't join them for the minyan. So he missed the opportunity to be together with the minyan. Amalei barheya the hillel, my dichtiv. So he went on to query about other psukim. It says, v'shavtem uritem ben tzadik l'rasha. This is Malachi Gimel. This is the Haftorah for Shabbat HaGadol. It says over there, you will come back, or eat them, you'll see, ben tzadik the rasha, you will differentiate between the righteous and those that are wicked. Ben oveda lukim, lasher lo abado, the one who worshiped God to the one who did not worship God. He says, wait a minute, the pasuk seems to be parallel. It says, hainu tzadik, hainu oveda lukim. Isn't the righteous one the one who worshiped God? Hainu rasha, the one who's wicked, hainu asher lo abado. Why does the pasuk repeat the same differentiation twice? Samalei, so Hillel responded to him, avado velo abado, tavayu tzadiki gemire ninu. Whether they are considered to be a worshiper of a god or not a worshiper of God, they're both tzaddikim. This is a subset of the category of those that are righteous. So then, ve'enu domeh, shone pirko me'a pi'amim, l'shone pirko me'a ve'achad. There's no comparison between someone who reviews his learning 100 times to someone who reviews his learning 101 times. So what he's saying is that they're both tzaddikim, but the person who reviewed it 100 times is considered to be lo avado, that he's not one who's an eved Hashem. The one who did it 101 times is considered to be an Eved Hashem. Amaleu mishum chad zimna kari le'lo avado. For this one extra time, that person is considered to be not worshiping God if he only did 100. Amalein? He says yes. Hillel says that's the case. Tseulamed mishuk shel chamarim. Go out and look at the donkey drivers, or the equivalent today of taxi drivers. Asara parse bezuza. If you go a fixed distance of 10 parsot, you pay 1 zuz. Chadasar parse. If you go 11, if you go over that threshold, then betray zuzi, they automatically charge you the double the fee. Same like the taxis, they have a perimeter in which their fee is fixed. If you go beyond the perimeter, they double the fee. It's not like incremental that they add on 1/10 of the price. As soon as you cross over that threshold, they double the fee. So something over here, the difference between 100 and 101 is not simply the difference of 1, it's the equivalent of going over a threshold which changes the dynamic completely. The way that most explain this over here is that there is 100 is the standard, or 10 parsot by the donkey drivers is the standard. So one who does the standard, that's enough to be a tzaddik, but it's not enough to be an Oved Hashem. You want to be an Oved Hashem, you have to do more than the standard. You have to push yourself beyond what everyone else does. And so therefore the 101st time is a demonstration of this person's willingness to go that extra step in Avodat Hashem, and that's why he's called an Oved Elukim. Someone who's willing to stand against the current or go out of the norm. And that's why in the Torah, actually, Moshe Rabbeinu is called an Eved Hashem. And so is Kalev ben Yefuneh, because Kalev ben Yefuneh stood up to the other Meraglim, and therefore he's designated as an Eved Hashem because he didn't go with the flow. He didn't follow everyone else. He took himself aside. He did something different. He extended himself beyond what was considered to be the norm, which actually matches well with the Limud and Masechet Avot that comes from Ben Bagbag, which is the Fum Tzara Agra, which actually matches up with the nature of the Limud that he brings over here. V'amrele Eliyahu lebar Hehe. So Eliyahu says the Bar Hehe, V'amrele le Rabbi Elazar, and some say it was the Rabbi Elazar, Mai Dechdiv. What is meant by the Pasuk? Hinei Tzrafticha velo b'chosef, b'charticha b'kuroni. I have smelted you, but not with silver. We'll see what that means in a second. B'charticha, I have chosen you b'kuroni. In the cauldron or the furnace of affliction. Hashem went around to see what would be the best thing to keep Bnei Yisrael on track. And he saw that affliction and poverty were the best things. This is what people say. That the affliction and the poverty is good for the Jews. Like red reins are to a white horse. I mean, the red reins, in the contrast to the white horse, is something that stands out. In of themselves, the reins are not important, but when they're put on a white horse, that makes them into something special. So too, Anyuta by itself is not valuable, but when put together with the Jews, it helps to keep them on track. It helps them to do the right thing. It's not that there's something inherently wrong with wealth. It's just that there are high risks when you get involved with wealth. As Sefer Dvarim already tells us, there's the risk of saying in Parshat Ekev, Kochi ve'utzim yodi asali et ha'chayel hazeh, as well as in the upcoming Parshat Hazino, there it also tells us the risks of Vayishman Yishurun, Vayivat, Tramanta, Avita, Kasita, and then Vayitosh Shelukah, you throw off God. So there is a risk to wealth that has to be managed properly. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. There's nothing wrong with wealth. There's nothing inherently negative about it. Just the risks are so much higher so that when you talk about Oni, the affliction, the Aniyut, there's less risk of a person throwing off the yoke of a heaven versus when they have wealth. But if people manage it properly once they have the wealth, then there's no reason for Hashem not to give us that blessing and to not give us the ability to be free of affliction and free of poverty. Now, how you explain the pasuk? The way Rashi reads the pasuk is, I have smelted you. Lo b'kesef means not like you would do with silver. I smelted you, I cleaned you with the cauldron or the furnace of affliction. So the way Rashi describes it is that the tzeraftichah is not the way that Hashem did it. I smelted you, but not the way that silver is smelted, meaning in the fire. I didn't do it in the fire, but rather I did it in the kur. The way the Marsha reads it is that he needs tzeraftichah below b'kesef. I smelted you below b'kesef, and I did that by not giving you money. And then, b'charticha, how did I do that? B'kuroni. According to the Marsha, there's actually a parallel structure in the pasuk, which is they're both describing the way that Hashem did this, or cleansed us, or smelted us. The first case is without money, and the second case is through oni, through affliction. The way Rashi is describing it, the first half of the pasuk is telling you how Hashem did not do it, and the second half is talking about how Hashem did do the cleansing or the smelting. Reb Shimon ben Asi omer, Ezu me'uvat lo yochol litkon, ze abal erva v'luid mimenu mamzer. We saw this in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Holidin lo hilud lo." Only if they give birth to a mamzer is this something that's not rectifiable. But if he didn't give birth, it's okay. V'atani Rabbi Shimon ben Asi omer, "Gunei v'adam efshar shiachzir gnevo." Person steals, he can return that which he stole. V'itakein, and then he'll rectify the situation. Guzel adam, if a person snatches something from someone else, efshar shiachzir gzelo, he can return that which he stole. V'itakein, and it'll be fixed, it'll be rectified. V'abal eshedish, someone who has an extramarital affair with a woman who is married, vasra la bala. Then by having this affair with this woman, she cannot return to her husband. Nitrad mina olam alachlo. This is something you can't rectify because you've now ruined something forever. It's a permanent stain. It's a permanent problem that cannot be rectified. So you see here, even without the birth of a mamzer, having this illicit relationship causes a problem that is a permanent problem. So where it says, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai omer, ein omer bakru gamal. We don't say, go and check a camel. Bakru chazir, go check a pig. Ela bakru tle, go check out a lamb. So what he is suggesting here is when you come to bring a korban, nobody goes out to say, and go get me a camel to check to see if it has a mum, or go get a chazir, because they're not even in the world of korbanot. Ela bakru tle, take something that is ra'ui for a korban and check it if it has a mum in it. Vezezeh, zit tamud chacham shepirish min haTorah. Again, this is similar to what we saw in the Mishnah. This is describing someone that was Ra'oi, someone that was already on the straight and narrow path, and then he left the path, and it's describing a Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish Amar, Ko Talmud Chacham Shepiresh min haTorah, Alav HaKatuv Omer, any Talmud Chacham that leaves the Torah, the Pasuk says about him, Kitzipor nodedet min hakina, it's like a bird that flies away, has removed himself from the nest, Kenish noded mimkamo, so too is this person who has wandered away from his place. That's describing a person who's left Torah. Torah is his place, like the nest for the bird, which is home. So too, the Torah is the home for the individual. And the bird that wanders away from his nest is in danger. so too, the person who leaves Torah has put himself in a path of danger. And the reason that they're connected to the bird is mifatpet. It sings and talks all the time. So too, the Talmud Chacham is always engaged in Torah. Vomer, ma matzu avotechem bi avel, ki rachaku me'elai. What did your forefathers find that was wrong with me, that was inappropriate, ki rachaku me'elai, that they left me? It's at the beginning of Yirmiyahu, describing why B'nai Yisrael rejected Hashem as their God. So you see that that's describing a Talmud Chacham. So the latter half of what we describe here, Rabbi Shimon Yochai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, is something that we saw from the Mishnah already. That's another interpretation of Muvat Lo Yechol Litkon, which is that they believe Muvat Lo Yechol Litkon must be talking about someone who was once on the path and then left the path, veered from what was the straight and narrow, and that's why it's talking about a Talmud Chacham. Whereas now we're going back to the original question, which is, Rabbi Shimon Manasseh in the Mishnah seems to indicate that the only problem is if there's a mamzer born. Yet, we have over here a description from Rabbi Shimon Manasseh in the Braita that suggests even when there's no mamzer born, the illicit relationship itself is a problem that cannot be rectified because you're then oser, the person's wife, on her husband. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha, kan b'achoto apnuya, kan b'eish adish. One is talking about his sister, that is an erva. An erva there, if he has an illicit relationship with his sister, again, it's improper, it's a chiyuv karet, it's something terrible, but again, there can be tshuva for that act because there's no permanent quote-unquote damage from that. She can marry still, and you can do tshuva, and there was no leftover residual from that act in terms of the birth of a mamzer. On the other hand, when it comes to nation ish, when it comes to having to an illicit relationship with a married woman, then you have a problem. Even if there's no mamzer born from that relationship, because you now are oser this woman on her husband. Whereas by achoto apnuya, it's only a problem if the mamzer is born, because then it becomes a permanent stain, not something that can be rectified. Tosafot points out over here that it's interesting that the Gemara uses achoto apnuya as an example, which is a chiyuv karet, which means that the Gemara takes it for granted that you can have a mamzer from a chiyuv karet, which is, according to Shimon HaTemani, it's a machloket, whether that is the case, only from chiyuvei mete beitin can you have a mamzer, not from a chiyuv karet. Here the Gemara takes it for granted that that would be the case. If it was a chiyuv karet, there would be a mamzer produced. Some say no, that both incidences are talking about where it's a married woman. Depends if the woman was a willing participant. If he raped the woman, then the woman is permitted to go back to her husband. So again, it's not a permanent stain. Because if he does tshuva, if they can rectify it, obviously these are not simple things. It's not something that you just dismiss lightly. But if they can rectify the situation, the woman is still permitted to her husband. So it wasn't a permanent problem. And if he doesn't give birth to mamzer, then everything can, quote unquote, be rectified. On the other hand, kan beratzon, if the woman is a willing participant, then even if they don't have a mamzer, there's a permanent residual to the act, which is that she cannot return to her husband. Both of them are telling me a case of rape. Depends whether the victim was a wife of Israel, where she can return to her husband, versus the wife of a Kohen, where she cannot return to her husband because of the problem of Ones and Zona, where the Kohen cannot marry or continue to be married to this woman. What the Gemara comes up with are different scenarios in which one activity of illicit relationship is permanent effect. Since it has permanent effect, even without the birth of a mamzer, it's problematic, like which is being suggested by Rabbi Shimon Manasseh in the Braita. So here that's the case of a woman who is married, or the case of a woman who is married who is a willing participant, or the case of Eshet Kohen where she was raped. On the other hand, there are other illicit relationships which do not have a permanent mark unless there's a mamzer born out of them. So that was either the case of sister, the case of the rape of a Israelite woman, not a Kohen, which she can return to her husband afterwards, so there's no permanent damage unless there was a mamzer born from that relationship. Then the Gemara continues, Ulutze ulaba in shalom. So the one who goes out and who comes in, there is no peace. Amarav, kemin shiotze adam mi dvar halacha the dvar mikra, shuvein lo shalom. Someone who was learning halacha, someone who was learning the core of halacha and then goes back to learning Tanakh or learning Chumash, then he doesn't have peace anymore. So if he leaves what is called the more in-depth learning, he leaves the learning that gives him guidance as how to pasuk, and then goes out back to the psukim where he can't come to a psak, or can't come to a conclusion, that's going to leave a person without peace. Ushmol amar, zeh poresh min talmud u'mishnah. This is someone who goes from Gemara back to learning Mishnah. In Gemara, you reconcile all the different stirot and mishnayot. You have an understanding of how to come to a conclusion. If you learn the mishnayot, you're going to be left with, yes, you have a bundle of learning, a bundle of knowledge, but that knowledge cannot be put to use because the mishnayot are not the final say on the matter. You need the Gemara to explain to you the mishnayot. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu mishas l'shas. Even from one Gemara to the other Gemara, the way that Rashi explains this, this is from the Talmud Yushalmi to the Talmud Bavli, that if you leave the Yushalmi and go to the Bavli, as the Gemara explains, the description of the Gemara Bavli in Sanhedrin is, Machshachim Hoshivani Kimete Olam Zushasho Bavli. It's like you took me through the dark of the dead, and that's the Bavli. The Bavli is a difficult and not as clear and not as good a Gemara, and therefore if you leave the Yushalmi to go to the Bavli, that is a downgrade that's going to leave you not at ease. As we know, the story about Rabbi Zeira, when he made Aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he tried to forget everything he had learned in Bavel in order to relearn everything in Eretz Yisrael in the Yerushalmi format. Tosafot suggests that it might be the other way around as well, which is that it might even be true if a person leaves the Bavli to go to the Yerushalmi, that he also will not be left in peace, and he suggests it's because you didn't finish. If you don't complete, if you don't take care of the body of knowledge that you're learning, and then you move on to the other body of knowledge, that's the problem. So it could be from shas to shas, it could be from mesechta to mesechta, because when you move on to the next one, you'll never complete the first one, you'll be left incomplete in that. And so too, in the next mesechta, you're going to do the same thing, you're not going to have a full grasp of everything's there. So it could be switching either way in the shas Bavli to Yushalmi or Yushalmi to Bavli, or it could be talking about different mesechta that you need to finish, you need to complete the learning, you can't jump around, otherwise you'll never gain any full understanding of a body of knowledge. But basically, what's being described here is the importance of the learning in depth, the importance of continuing down a path of understanding where one completes that understanding, and this doesn't leave things hanging where they're going to have a lack of ease because they never gain the full understanding or they never can reach conclusions about that which they learned. Which is very similar to the limud of Rav Shimon bar Yochai that me'aveit lo yochol litkon, that someone who goes off the derech had to be on a path beforehand. Here too, we're describing people that were on a path of learning and then leave that path of learning, which takes them to a place of unease because they were on the right path, they were doing something that was more in depth, and then they veer from that path and it takes them to a place where they're not at ease. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on Yud Amud Aleph.